When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay. This press conference is being organised to put on record the anger felt by teachers at all levels to the insertion of Clause 37(1) to the Employment Equality Bill. This clause specifically exempts religious controlled bodies from the bill's general bar on religious discrimination. We wish to highlight the absurdity of a bill claiming to...
The judgment in the High Court of Justice Costello was that... I had been sacked, and I quote, for failing to observe the Catholic ethos and mores of the institution in which I taught. But my solicitor, Simon Kennedy, was trying to point out the contradiction in the sequence of events, that certainly Sister Benignus interviewed me before she went. Because she had heard rumours that I was having an association, whatever you make of the term association, with a married man, also in inverted commas. And Simon pointed out throughout the case that it was very strange that not really much more was said about any of this, if anything at all, up until the time that they had confirmation of the pregnancy. And yet they tried to say that the pregnancy had nothing to do with the dismissal.
We rejected also in the light of the Eileen Flynn case, where most significantly she was sacked on the grounds of maintaining a religious ethos, the phrase which most ominously crops up in the actual wording now to pass into law.
I was staying in a flat in the centre of town in 2 Mary Street. The streets were being done up at the time, and the streets were all dug up, and there were pipes and whatever. And I was coming out of the flat, going somewhere, and this child, as children are wont to do, was walking along the pipe and fell and gave herself a bad cut. So I asked her where she lived, and I went down and went in, and Richie was there in the kitchen. Girl was there, showed me up to the kitchen, and that was the first time I had actually set eyes on him. And I explained that the girl who turned out to be Rebecca, who was the second eldest in the family, she's 23 now, had fallen and given herself a cut. So he thanked me, and I didn't stay long, and I went on my way again. And having been down in the pub then, a lot of the people that I knew to go out socially with, some of them went down to the pub, so I started socialising in the pub and we got chatting. It was like a force of nature, but I knew even at that time that he was what I wanted. I became very attached to the children, and our relationship did develop.
Convent of the Holy Faith, Rossbirkin, New Ross, County Wexford, the 30th of the 8th, 1981. Miss Eileen Flynn, BA, HDip in Ed, came to this school as a probationer teacher in September 1978. She had done some supply work in Good Counsel College and was recommended by Father John Cosgrave, OSA, rector. She is a very gifted young lady and was then full of promise. Her results at the end of her first and second years of teaching were most satisfactory. She was notified in April 1979 that she was being given a permanent position. In the course of the following year, habits of unpunctuality were noticed, and attendance began to be rather irregular from time to time. It was in the course of her third school year, 1980-81, that complaints from parents regarding the quality of her work began, and there were some disquieting reports of unacceptable behaviour outside school hours. It was some considerable time before this knowledge came to my ears. I spoke to Eileen regarding her schoolwork on a couple of occasions during the year. She was always courteous and seemed receptive. Accusations of a more serious nature have been made in recent weeks. Many parents are not satisfied to have their children taught by a teacher whose personal life, they claim, is not above reproach. I interviewed Eileen formally on August the 13th, 1981, and put the situation before her, telling her that unless there is a remarkable improvement, it will lead to the termination of her contract at the end of the school year 1981-82. Sister Mary Benignus MacDonagh.
Do you recall the circumstances under which you took Eileen's case on?
Yes, there was a solicitor working with me who was actually consulted. He was consulted by her and he mentioned the case to me. And initially, I was incredulous that she might be facing dismissal. But when I discovered that it was in fact the case, I suppose I was shocked. I didn't believe that a person's private life could be exposed to that type of scrutiny at that time. And I was particularly upset by the fact that she was pregnant.
Was it a difficult decision for you to make to take the case on? I mean, this is a small town.
No.
Sister Benignus brought me in the summer of 81, I think. She had heard rumours that a relationship was forming, so she wanted to speak to me about it, and she told me that parents were complaining that a relationship was forming with this man whom they considered to be an undesirable. And I said the relationship was purely platonic, and I suppose, to be honest, at that stage it was not really the case, because I had definite feelings towards him and towards his the kids and the whole lot. And I also stated that I considered, you know, that was outside of school, the school domain, and that I didn't think I was doing anything which was wrong or not above board, and that my private life, I considered it to be my private life, exactly that, no concern of the convents or the school.
It was the fact that she was living with a married man that was totally at variance with what we felt was proper and right for our school, for a Catholic school. And so I interviewed Eileen formally and put the situation to her, as is in my statement of the time, and let her know that it was obvious now that unless there was a marked improvement in her personal behaviour, personal living, that sadly it would lead to the termination of her contract, possibly the following year. As the time of my departure approached, and as the problem seemed to be becoming more and more evident and obvious with more and more parents, I decided to let the manager of the school know of the situation before handing on to my successor.
It was in June 1981 when Sister Benignus came to speak to me and inform me about the situation. And I remember the burden of her message was the anxiety and concern and the complaints from parents. Well, I was immediately aware that should the situation continue, that it could become a major problem for the school. Now, when Sister Pauline came to speak with me, I remember that she indicated that she would be keeping a file. And I would have let her know that I considered the keeping of a file to be very important. And we also agreed that she would keep in frequent contact with me about the situation.
Miss Eileen Flynn called today to collect her salary. I brought her into the office and asked her to read Sister Benignus's account of their meeting of August the 13th, dated the 30th of August 1981. She did so, saying, "I won't sign anything, I've got advice." I replied that I only wanted her to read the statement to assess if it was a fair and accurate account of what transpired between herself and Sister Benignus on August the 13th, 1981. While reading, Miss Flynn commented that it was extraordinary how many people knew one's private life and set themselves up as gods in judgment. Having read the document, Miss Flynn agreed that it was a fair and accurate account of the meeting of August the 13th, 1981. Sister Pauline M. Leonard, 11th of the 9th, 1981.
The school authorities would like to present a picture that most of the parents at the school were outraged by Eileen's situation. Would this have been your understanding?
When the case started initially in front of the Employment Appeals Tribunal on the first day, which was in September, and it was a very warm day, there were actually very few people in court apart from the protagonists. And as I recall, I'm not sure if the local press were there. They may have been. This would not have been a regular sitting of the court. It would have been fixed by arrangement with the court caretaker for the Employment Appeals Tribunal, which is run under the auspices of the Department of Labour, as it then was. The result was there would have been very little advanced publicity in relation to the case. But when the story began to leak out, suddenly, on the second day, the national press were there, and the case went on. I'm not sure for how many days on the second sitting. I think maybe another day, I'm not really sure. But at that particular point, it was beginning to take on a different attitude, not simply locally, but nationally as well.
I got on with my life, and in either October, November, I think, of that year, I actually moved into Seven the Quay. And at that stage, in September, I didn't know that I was pregnant. But when I realised that I was, in fact, pregnant, I moved in. People in general, I mean, it is a very small town. We're aware, I think, after a while, certainly by September of 1981, October, November, that there was some kind of a relationship going on, platonic or otherwise, because I had been to functions with Richie. I had gone to a dress dance in Wexford. I had gone to the local dinner dance. As far as I remember, I can't be sure, I went to the local Garda dance. I was in love with him. I wasn't ashamed of the situation.
You can never say how long a person's going to stay with you. We were very happy. And she's an intelligent person. She used to look after the kids for me, you know. They took to her as a sort of a... The kids would take to it as a mother job, you know. She brought off my youngest over to her mother's on one of her weekends off or something, and he was only 3 or something. So things just happen like that. there's always people out there ready to crucify people, you know. Like, I didn't. It didn't worry me. And I thought in this day and age that it's not an offence, you know what I mean? I suppose it proved differently. I think my reputation preceded me. If you have a beard, and I knew a few people that were involved in politics. But I suppose it was more so me, yeah. Like, if you're involved in Sinn Féin, you're a bad guy, you know. But at the time, the hunger strikes were going on, and a lot of people were marching. She was painted with the same brush if she was living with me.
No, at no stage did I think of leaving Richie. And it wasn't, certainly from the point of view of keeping my job, it was actually never put to me. Leave this man and you can save your job. You know, to play the devil's advocate. Nobody has asked, like, did Richie ever consider not supporting me? I mean, he was running a business in town, which is very public business. He had three children. He had been deserted by his wife, who was God knows where. And I think really one of the things that stands out in my mind was that, in my opinion, Richie acted in a far more Christian way than a lot of the professed Christians around at the time. In fact, but for him, I don't know, would I have been able to cope? He was very, very supportive. And I was very aware in the back of my mind that pregnancy outside of marriage would be frowned on, certainly by a Catholic institution. But I do feel that in the situation in which I found myself, I think every situation is different. And I do think that more understanding and more tolerance could have been brought to mind.
October the 20th. Miss Eileen Flynn returned to school on Monday afternoon, October the 19th, 1981, after an absence of 2 weeks. I invited her to the office after first class at 9:40 a.m. this morning to tell her what I had done with her English classes during her absence. Miss Flynn was grateful for the work done. Miss Flynn is still feeling tired, but says she feels able to work. The interview was friendly. October the 21st, 1981. Miss Flynn was 10 minutes late for the class after lunch break. I heard the class in an uproar. This drew my attention to the absence of the teacher. November the 8th, 1981. 7 minutes late in the morning. On November the 11th, Miss Eileen Flynn is absent today. It is now 10:10 a.m. and as yet I have had no communication from her. November the 13th. Miss Eileen Flynn was in school this afternoon. She said that she was sick during the night and didn't wake up until 12 o'clock. Again, I pointed out to her that she had an obligation to tell me before 9 a.m. if she was going to be absent, so that I could make arrangements for someone to take her classes. I also said I wasn't pleased with her unpunctuality and her absences without informing me. I advised her to try to improve, that my first duty was to the children under my care. Miss Flynn said that she saw my point and apologised.
Yes, I expected that we would win the case on the basis that particularly that I believed it would be seen that her private life was her own affair, and more particularly from a legal perspective, that it was very difficult to see how her dismissal was not a matter connected with her pregnancy, given that she wasn't dismissed until, in fact, her pregnancy was disclosed. This couldn't happen to a man. How could a man be discovered to be pregnant? How could it be discovered in any respect, as long as he didn't admit to it? And in those circumstances, I felt that there were strong legal grounds to support a contention that she was dismissed inter alia for matters connected with her pregnancy. I think for a finish, whilst that argument wasn't accepted in the subsequent courts, in the Circuit Court and in the High Court, the fact of the matter was that at the Employment Appeals Tribunal level, the tribunal divided on the matter. The two lay people on the tribunal, they went against that point of view. The chairman of the tribunal, who was a lawyer, he supported the contention that she was unfairly dismissed. But since he was outnumbered, the first case was lost, as was the second and the third, the two appeals to the Circuit Court and the High Court.
Could you enlarge on that?
Okay.
Pregnancy had absolutely nothing to do with this case. Eileen would have been formally informed in August 1981 that should she continue in this relationship, that her contract would be terminated at the end of that year, 1981 to 82. And in the September of that year, Sister Pauline, who was the new principal, also formally informed Eileen. And there was no question of pregnancy at that stage. The decision had to be my decision because, as manager, it was incumbent on me to be the person who took responsibility for that decision. I certainly would have given it very, very, very careful attention and reflection. I would have sought advice on several fronts. I would have sought advice from the CMRS, that is the body who are now known as CORI. I was a member of the Education Commission at that time. I sought advice from the diocesan officers, from the Secretariat of Secondary Schools, from the people in the sisters in our own congregation who were involved in decision-making at that time, from managers of other schools, and from our legal advisors. And at the end of that long process, there comes a point when one has to face one's responsibilities and a decision has to be taken, irrespective of how difficult or how painful.
December the 4th. Miss Flynn missed the first two classes this morning. She came to the office at 10:10 a.m. to apologise. She was very distressed. January the 26th. Miss Flynn was 25 minutes late for 9 a.m. class last Thursday, January the 21st. When I mentioned this fact to her, she did not apologise either for being late or for not reporting her lateness to me. I reminded Miss Flynn I was keeping a file. February the 4th, 1982. Miss Flynn was 7 minutes late for 9 a.m. class. February the 15th. Miss Flynn was 20 minutes late for class. I again reminded her that a file was being kept. March the 11th, 1982. Miss Flynn rang at 8:40 a.m. She had a chest cold and intended to visit the doctor. She rang in the evening to say she had been given an injection and tablets. She said she would be in school on Friday afternoon if she felt better. I asked her to come and see me. Someone said there were rumours she was pregnant.
And I got all that out of reading these transcripts, but what was the significance of the bishop's involvement in this?
It was a significant matter in that the evidence on the first occasion suggested that at the point where the principal of the school had discovered the pregnancy, that the option was put, as I referred to it on the occasion, Hobson's choice was given to her, to Eileen Flynn. And that was that she resign or be dismissed. Now, that's no choice. And that was put on the day in April when the regional manager, regional superior, should I say, called down to visit her as a result of a phone call from the principal. Subsequently, in the circuit court, that position did not come out as clearly, since it appeared that on the testimony of the nuns that consultations had been taking place over a period of time with the bishop in the diocese. Now, that had the effect in the circuit court, in my opinion of it, of showing a less than spontaneous reaction to the news, which came out in the Employment Appeals Tribunal. That did not emerge in the circuit court with the same, I suppose, dramatic consequence, if you like. It didn't have the same reaction. That had a significant bearing on the case, in my view of it.
This elusive Catholic ethos seems only to have a negative ability and a negative power, like the punishment of the missioners when they stamped around years ago and preached hell and fire and brimstone. Is the only sin in Ireland sex, and is the only sin after that being caught? Because if we're going to talk about a Catholic ethos, it has far-reaching tentacles to much more than just finding yourself pregnant in a non-regulated situation from the church's point of view. I mean, where does the line of privacy stop or intrusion begin? That's the question here. And I think that when a person is a teacher or whatever in a religiously run institution, certainly one would have to be very sensitive to the ideals that the institution was achieved to promote or founded to promote. But having said that, with regard to all of that, I certainly think that the Christian ethic of understanding and tolerance and forgiveness, that's what the whole of the religion is meant to be about, of that religion is meant to be about. And I think there's poor hope if people are going to be policed and hounded because they don't conform or they do something which falls short of the ideal that these schools or whatever stand for.
Well, my understanding of school-based education is the contribution which the school makes to the formation and the development of young people during their school-going years. Now, that would address, of course, the spiritual, the academic, the moral, the aesthetic, the physical, in short, every aspect of the human personality. And all that would be done in the context of the gospel and of the norms and standards and values of the Catholic Church. And it is out of that context that the distinctive spirit or ethos which permeates every aspect of the school, arises. And these then are the values and the standards which we would try to instill into these young people who have been entrusted to us by their parents. And the whole process of education is indeed a very complex process. But for me, having spent decades involved in the service of young people, I would be convinced that the one most important ingredient in that whole complex matter of the teacher.
March the 15th. Miss Eileen Flynn returned to school this morning. I told her about the rumour that she was pregnant and asked her if it was true. She denied it emphatically. Miss Flynn was open about her fondness for Richie Roach and her deep love for the children. She said they were like her own children. She also said she knew she was in a very difficult situation. She felt torn, wrecked, and was contemplating leaving altogether, but she found this very difficult. She asked me to pray for her.
At that time, as the pregnancy went on, I was very thin, and I wasn't obviously pregnant at all. And I thought, you know, if I can get through the school year and be able to take stock of my situation, I'll have the whole summer holidays and any, you know, the thing of a one-day wonder. And come September, there'll be something else.
April the 2nd. Told Miss Eileen Flynn that a representative of the parents came last week, Wednesday the 24th, to tell me how they felt about what they had heard about her, that she was pregnant. I again asked her if she was pregnant, and she said no. She talked for a while about how she felt re the situation, and then said that she would be going home next Tuesday to have a long think about it.
I mean, abortion, all these things crossed my mind, but not really as on a serious level. And I didn't want to leave New Ross. I was in love with Richie. I was a family unit. The children were there on the quay. He was there. And no, I didn't, because I felt during that whole year, people asked me, like, how did I cope, and that I must have been under terrible pressure. But the support that I got in that kind of a home, in that kind of a family situation, certainly stood to me in being able to endure and keep on going and keep on functioning and keep on believing that everything would be all right.
April the 20th. I had an interview with Miss Eileen Flynn today. She admitted that she is pregnant and that the baby is due sometime in the summer. She has not consulted a doctor since the pregnancy was confirmed. She is very frightened. I promised to help her in whatever way possible. I told Miss Flynn that my brother Francis, PP, in Harrow Road, London, would be happy to help her. He said that he would meet her at the airport and bring her to the home. She also had the offer of being brought to Dublin by me and of staying with my mother in Glasnevin until the time of her departure. Miss Flynn said that she felt much easier in her mind. She wishes to continue in the school until the summer holidays. The baby is due sometime in July. I said that the next few weeks would decide whether that would be possible.
For me, the significant thing about the case, as a general principle, was that it was argued at the time that in order to promote the religion espoused by the church, of whom I'm a member, it was necessary to inculcate into young people institutions which had the ethos of Catholicism. And whilst I can accept that, I think education is a different matter to inculcation. Education is a right under the Constitution, but as well as that, it's a natural right. It is also coming from a particular place, which is not necessarily espousing a particular doctrinal point of view on any particular matter, but it's leading people out of themselves. Whereas inculcation is the offering to somebody of received truths and belief. And that's a different process. And I think the confusion of the two, I don't think it's either desirable or necessary.
In the interview in which I admitted that I was pregnant, Sister Paulina did say about her brother and that I could stay overnight in Dublin with her mother or whatever. And I suppose, like, in her own fashion, from her angle, she was trying to help. But I think I didn't seriously entertain going over to England and staying with her brother. It was more so as a kind of a placating type of a thing, because in that interview it hit me for the first time that the school was viewing this in a very negative, almost doomsday type of fashion. And I suppose, to be honest, probably somewhere, even if I were unconscious or unaware of it at the time, in the back of my head was, I wanted to try to fall in with her idea of things at that time as much as I could. I couldn't take much extra pressure, and it seemed easier to row in with what she was suggesting than to be confrontational and say, well, no, I'm not leaving. Because you must remember that that was March, I think. March, April, March. And it was very late on in the year and late on in the pregnancy. And it was becoming more and more of a strain. And I didn't need any kind of confrontational thing that, no, I'm not going to do this or I'm not going to do that. And it seemed just the easiest thing to do at the time. More so to set her mind at rest than my own. I must honestly say I felt totally harassed. It was like I felt harassed, I felt hounded, I felt policed, I felt that I was being singled out, what about my timekeeping and about various other things. And it certainly added to the strain of being pregnant and trying to keep going and whatever.
Well, Sister Pauline had been in contact with me all the time, and at this stage she informed me that with the vice principal that they had decided that I should come along and speak with Eileen. So I said that I would. I mean, she knew that I was prepared to go at any time when she let me know that it was the wish of the school that I should do so. At that meeting, I reiterated what the two principals had already told to Eileen. I spoke about the increasing number of complaints from parents as this situation became more public. I told her about my concern about her own position. And I put it before her that should she decide to continue in this relationship, well, then that her position in the school would be untenable.
I taught school until the 4th of June, which would have been the Friday. We broke up for the school holidays. And in fact, the day after the bank holiday Monday, I had Richard in Wexford Hospital. I was living over the pub all summer as a family unit, and I had no more communication from the convent until sometime in early August. I got a phone call from one of the nuns, anyway, from the primary section of the school in St. Canice's, asking me to come over a day or two later to meet with Sister Mariana Power again. And She asked me at that meeting to resign. And I didn't resign.
It is therefore with considerable regret that I find that you have left me no choice but to dismiss you, because your conduct has been fundamentally inconsistent with your position as a teacher in the school. I believe I would be justified in dismissing you summarily. But in spite of the fact that you rejected the offer I made you at our meeting, I still feel very deeply for you, and I am still prepared to give you more extended notice in the hope that it will ease things for you. I am therefore terminating your employment with effect from the 30th of November 1982. I do not require you to perform your teaching duties during that period, and a cheque for the sum of £2,026 is enclosed herewith, which would equate to what you would have received over the 4 months commencing the 1st of August 1982 and ending the 30th of November 1982. You are being replaced in the school as from the 1st of August 1982, and in the interests of the pupils, I would be glad if you would not attend the school after it reopens. I am sorry that matters have had to come to this, but I hope that in due course you will see that I have had no option but to take this course, given my responsibilities to the school, to the pupils, and to their parents. Sister Mary Anna Power, School Manager.
I think that's it, really, Simon, unless there's anything else that comes to your mind that you wanted to add about, you know, about the case, about the significance of it.
Looking back on it now, it seems like a long time ago. There are times I think, yes, there has been change, and then there are times when I see or hear points of view being expressed which would make you despair. I think ultimately matters of this nature, they're not well resolved at law. Law is hard. Matters of this nature are resolved, I think, with compassion and understanding, which I think that's one of the reasons that I think I would have fought the case anyhow. I think it's one of the reasons that Eileen would have stood up for her rights. There would be an aspect of the Christian message that I would have felt was perhaps being ignored. And I still feel that.
If you enjoyed this documentary, you might like to listen to our other Documentary on One productions. Visit rte.ie/docon1.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.